Thank you, Bill. As I call the session to order on prospects for a humane economy in the contemporary world, I'm rather grateful to Bill Campbell for his kind invitation to chair this panel, a panel whose topic is rather dear to me both as an economist and a theologian. In fact, it was Bill himself who, at a Piety Hill seminar hosted by Russell Kirk, who introduced me to the thought of Willem Repke some years ago when I was still finishing up my undergraduate studies in economics at Chicago, steeped in the arcane ways of monetarism and mathematical analysis. Well, Bill, it didn't take much for me to slide from economism to economic philosophy, to philosophy properly writ, to theology, and the prospects for my own personal economy have declined marginally ever since. When Bill and I first discussed the possibilities for this regional meeting, he offered me the incentive I helped out by chairing a panel to having the chairman's prerogative of speaking my mind for a little bit before the panelists got to the stage. While I will promise to not delay things too long, after all, I'm reminded as a Catholic priest of the story of the priest who got to heaven and was put out that St. Peter made him wait while a taxicab driver was accommodated first into the pearly gates. When he inquired how that might be in the rightful order of things, the priest was told, "Your sermons always put people to sleep. Now his driving gets them to pray." In any event, our topic this afternoon, prospects for a humane economy in the contemporary world. In his Humane Economy, whose 40th anniversary of publication we commemorate this year, Willem Repke was prescient enough to recognize that socialism in all its forms contained the seeds of its own destruction in its lack of proportion and its inevitable orientation to overstepping its limits. In this regard, he remarked that the market economy is no exception to the rule. Indeed, its advocates, insofar as they are intellectually fastidious, have always recognized that the sphere of the market, of competition, of the system, where supply and demand move prices and thereby govern production, may be regarded and defended only as part of a wider order encompassing ethics, laws, the natural conditions of life and happiness, the state, politics, and power. That community of both free markets and virtuous marketeers alone constitute what Repke defined as the humane economy, one fully in accord with the nature and the dignity of man. And I have no doubt that it would come as an immense satisfaction, if not vindication, to Willem Repke were he alive today and to see the extent to which his definition has been endorsed by the highest authority of my own Roman Catholic tradition, which has repudiated the attempts further to search out for a third way. In the very first volume of ISI's publication, Modern Age, Willem Repke again revealed himself a prophet before his time when he put himself on record as calling for liberal thinkers to, and I quote, "examine Catholic social philosophy in all its sources, works, and documents, and all its aspects to find out if it is akin to our idea of universal liberalism," unquote. This dialogue, carried out over the years by numerous thinkers, has bore fruit in 1991, is attested by the publication that year of the current Pope's landmark encyclical Centesimus Annus. While like other documents, Centesimus Annus reaffirmed the classic themes of Catholic social thought, it went further with a creative extension that makes the encyclical a singularly important document, one that reconfigures the boundaries of philosophical and theological debate over the right ordering of culture, economics, and politics. Like Repke, the Pope argued that the fundamental error of socialism is anthropological in nature, and concluded that not only is it wrong from the ethical point of view to disregard human nature, which is made for freedom, but in practice it is impossible to do so. And the letter went on not to hesitate to draw out the implications of this anthropology of human freedom in the field of economics. In fact, Centesimus Annus contains the most striking papal endorsement of the free economy ever, one which put to rest thoughts of a third way, endorsement that comes in the form of a pressing answer to a pressing question. Quote, "Can it be said that after the fall of communism, capitalism is the victorious social system, and that capitalism should be the goal of countries now making efforts to rebuild their economy and society. Is this the model which ought to be proposed to the countries of the Third World, which are searching for the path to true economic and civil progress? The answer is obviously complex. If capitalism is meant an economic system which recognizes the fundamental and positive role of business, the market, private property, and the resulting responsibility for the means of production, as well as free human creativity in the economic sector, then the answer is certainly in the affirmative. Be it as it may, what are the prospects for a humane economy as defined in the political economic tradition we inherit from Wilhelm Repke and the moral tradition with Sean Paul as the custodian? In economic terms, I'm certain our panelists will detail for us the prospects are quite good. In essence, the liberal agenda is the only one being seriously considered. In the United States, when we have been treated to the happy spectacle of a Democratic president who entered office with an unreconstructed left-wing agenda, turning around and signing a welfare reform bill into law, well, perhaps many of us are of the mind that that legislation did not go far enough, but be it as it may, that act was a significant step, a viewpoint reinforced when we consider that that same president stood before the Congress of the United States and declared, quote, "the era of big government is over," unquote. Everywhere in Western Europe, with perhaps the exception of France, governments have been elected or maintained power on the promise of respect for the free market. Even the left-wing coalition of Romano Prodi in Italy has managed to be the most stable post-war government in Italy by essentially being pro-business. All signs of good prospects. However, as Repke pointed out 4 decades ago, it is not possible to understand man on the basis of economics alone. No matter how well the economy is going, if the data collected by the Pew Research Center in late August is any indication, we have not secured the other half of the definition of a truly humane economy. When asked what one word described the present occupant of the White House, the top choice was liar, 42%, followed by dishonest, 18%, and untrustworthy, 12%. And yet, with annoying, if not alarming, consistency, some 60% of those same people polled, nonetheless, would not see him removed. While the economist in me is often at a loss to explain these data, the theologian is not. In these lines, one bears a true echo of the prophetic voice of Repke, whose constant reminder to us was economic life naturally does not go in a moral vacuum. Compound this moral collapse with political correctness, which makes the one unforgivable sin of our time judgmentalism, and our dilemma is all the more critical. It was Repke who reminded us that, quote, "discussion is impossible only where opinions may be expressed in complete freedom, but even then only on condition that both sides accept reason as the common denominator," end quote, where reason and the moral vision which is born of it clashes with inarticulate emotionalism, there can be no proper discussion. Thus Repke concluded that, quote, "contempt of reason leads to a contempt of man," end quote. And he proceeded to, quote, Goethe knew what he was doing when he let the devil exalt. Reason and knowledge only thou despise. The highest strength in man lies. Let but the lying state bind thee, and I shall have thee fast and sure. And thus we have arrived at the devil's own present day. All this, of course, is not an augury of good prospects for the humane economy in our times. So in the end, the humane economy is founded on neither economic axia or financial prosperity, but on the correct vision of man, flawed to be sure, but capable through reason and dialogue of devising institutions and structures that permit imperfect men and women to work together on their own and the common good. No one pretends that it will be easy to discern the common good in our contemporary pluralistic society. We must insist that each and every one of us has the responsibility to use our own rational faculties to the fullest to bring our beliefs and opinions closer to such moral vision as available to our mortal lights. And on the success of that endeavor, ultimately, would rest what I posit to be the true prospects for a humane economy. So without further ado, I have the privilege of introducing our distinguished panel this afternoon. We begin with Dr. Richard Rahn, who is presently President and Chief Executive Officer of Novacon LTD. Dr. Rahn has served as Vice President, Chief Economist of the Chamber of Commerce of the United States, where he managed the Chamber's Economic Policy Division and served as the Chamber's spokesman before the U.S. Congress, the national media, and various business and professional groups. During the same period, he was vice president and member of the board of the National Chamber Foundation and editor-in-chief of the Journal of Economic Growth. He has participated or directed economic growth projects in a number of countries, including Brazil, Estonia, Mexico, the Philippines, and Thailand. He served as the U.S. co-chairman of the Bulgarian Economic Growth and Transition Project in 1990 and a member of the U.S. Committee to Assist Russian Reform in 92 and 93. Dr. Ron received his B.A. in economics from the University of Florida, his M.B.A. from Florida State, and his Ph.D. in economics from Columbia University. The author of numerous articles in various journals, he most will be forthcoming with a book from the Discovery Institute, The End of Money and the Struggle for Financial Privacy, which presents the case for legal financial privacy and the necessity for changing our tax laws and our trade and financial laws to deal with the realities of the digital world. So, Dr. Ron.